Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with a Pantograph for Tuesday, November 24th, 2020. We will begin with the headline article on the front page entitled, Thankful. Even through 2020's travails, there are positives. This is by the Pantograph editorial board. Setting aside a day to give thanks is one of our country's finest traditions. We should share pride in this day and ponder the things for which we all, every race, every gender, every nationality, every religion, are thankful. Things are different this year, of course. A significant number of us are foregoing our tradition of large family gatherings and opting for a downsized version of the holiday. We're not mapping out plans for a Black Friday shopping charge. COVID-19 long ago eliminated any possibility of an area football team playing for a high school state championship. Some things won't change, however. Thanksgiving is a day for indulgence, and many of us will overdose on food and/or football. But there is hope all of us are able to take a break from whatever is occupying our attention and ponder some of the things for which we're thankful. Family and friends. Taking either for granted is easy, especially now. Remember them and don't be afraid to remind them how you feel. Just think of how you feel when someone randomly checks in on you. You can give dozens of people that same feeling with just a call, an email, text, or note saying, "Hi, I'm thankful for you." Servicemen and servicewomen, past and present. Thank them for their service and remind them of the assistance groups available. We continue to learn that members of our military aren't always taken care of or appreciated after their return. This is one of our country's greatest shames. Don't wait for them to ask for help. Let's do our best to make sure they know they're remembered. Freedom. Living in a country where criticism of the government results in arguments instead of jail is something that earns gratitude. Living in a country where our ability and opportunity to worship as we wish is a privilege. A roof, warm bed, and reasonably full pantry. Some of us have more or less than others. But once we see those who have little and aren't sure where they're sleeping next, our abodes become far more precious. Technology and our ability to afford and use it. Not so long ago, the idea of being able to carry in our pocket a small computer holding the entirety of a man's knowledge, along with thousands of photographs, hundreds of songs, and dozens of movies, was the stuff of science fiction. Today, we have abundant options and opportunities. The things that make us laugh. It can be something we see, hear, think, or conceive. Laughter is mankind's most joyous sound. Law enforcement. The police in our Bloomington Normal region work tirelessly to make sure we stay safe. That job has become more difficult this year for a variety of reasons, be it public criticism or the pandemic or people on the street with raised outrage levels. Healthcare workers. Many of them are on the front lines of this pandemic, putting in long hours in uncomfortable but necessary protective gear. Some have even separated themselves from their families in fear of exposing them to COVID-19. Chocolate. Or something else sweet, or something fried. On this day, we celebrate our plenty. We should enjoy it as much as we're able and as well be thankful. Who says a double cheeseburger can't be a Thanksgiving feast? Sports and entertainment. We can spend other days fretting about the triviality of our amusements and distractions. If today can be a day to be overwhelmed by football, or Hallmark movies, or game shows, or video games, or anything that we can enjoy, we can fret about the negatives of our pleasures at a later date, or ignore the negatives altogether and remind ourselves we can still receive rewards for surviving the year. Pets. We might take our critters for granted. We shouldn't. They don't ask much of us and give so much in return. Your support group. We all need one, and we're fortunate to have them. Again, thank them directly. It can't be overdone. put to use the start of the proclamation by President Abraham Lincoln that created Thanksgiving Day. The document was written by William Seward, Lincoln's Secretary of State, and signed by Lincoln on October 3, 1863. It begins, "The year that is drawing towards its close has been filled with the blessings of fruitful fields and healthful skies. To these bounties, which are so constantly enjoyed that we are prone to forget the source from which they come, others have been added, which are of so extraordinary a nature that they cannot fail to penetrate and soften even the heart which is habitually insensible to the ever-watchful providence of Almighty God. Happy Thanksgiving. We are thankful for all of you." On page 2, we have the headline, 15 more area deaths reported. Health officials advise staying home for the holiday. This is by Paul Sweech. 15 more people died of COVID-19 in Pantograph area counties, public health officials reported on Monday, as they advised people to celebrate Thanksgiving with immediate family only. While large gatherings are known to be high risk, small gatherings with people outside your household also pose a risk for spreading the virus, said Jessica McKnight, administrator of the McLean County Health Department. Traditional Thanksgiving gatherings with family and friends can increase the chances of getting or spreading COVID-19 or the flu. The safest way to celebrate Thanksgiving this year is to celebrate with your immediate family, household contacts, McKnight said. Meanwhile, during Monday's COVID briefing in Springfield, Dr. Ngozi Aziki, director of the Illinois Department of Public Health, said she expects the state to receive about 400,000 doses of the new COVID vaccine within a few weeks. Under the state's COVID-19 mass vaccination planning guide, the initial vaccine doses will be given to frontline hospital workers and first responders, and Aziki said that would include hospital cleaning and food service staff. David Hopper, McLean County Health Department Emergency Preparedness Coordinator, told the Pantograph last week that the health department has begun planning for when limited doses of the vaccine become available, perhaps in late December or early January, for staff and residents in long-term care facilities and critical workforce members who provide health care and other essential functions of society. Governor J.B. Pritzker said the vaccine wouldn't be available to the general public until March or April at the earliest. Aziki also said Monday that the federal government has given the state about 8,500 doses of an antibody therapy for people with mild to moderate COVID infections. She said the treatment is meant to be given early in the infection to reduce the risk of hospitalization for high-risk individuals and said IDPH was determining equitable distribution of the therapy. Area counties that have reported COVID-related deaths on Monday were McLean County, a woman in her 90s who was not associated with a long-term care facility in that county's 49th COVID fatality. Tazewell County, a woman in her 60s who had been a resident of Generations at Riverview in East Peoria. A woman in her 80s who was not a resident of a long-term care facility. A woman in her 90s who was a resident of Washington Senior Livington in Washington. A man in his 80s who has been resident of Apostolic Christian Restmore in Morton. And a man in his 90s who had been a resident of Washington Senior Living, bringing that county's fatality count up to 87. Livingston County, a woman in her 60s, a man in his 70s, and a woman in her 90s, bringing that county's death toll up to 20. LaSalle County, a man in his 80s, a woman in her 70s, a woman in her 90s, and a woman more than 100, meaning that county's COVID fatalities are up to 118. Logan County, a person in their 60s and a person in their 80s, meaning that county has had 11 COVID deaths. Meanwhile, COVID case counts also increased on Monday as McLean County reported 321 new COVID cases since Friday. Tazewell County reported 471, Livingston County reported 112, Logan County reported 124, and LaSalle reported 63. McKnight reported Monday that the 321 people diagnosed with the virus brings to 7,673 the number of county residents who have tested positive since March 19th. But the 7-day positivity rate, the rate of county residents tested in the past week who have tested positive for the virus, was 8.3% on Monday, compared with 10% on Friday. Of the 130,200 tests of county residents since March, 5.8% have come back positive for the virus, McKnight reported. 17 county residents are hospitalized with COVID, compared with 15 on Friday. McKnight cautioned that these numbers don't represent all patients hospitalized with COVID because Bloomington Normal hospitals also care for patients from neighboring counties. There are currently over 50 individuals hospitalized in McLean County hospitals for COVID-19, McKnight said. Our hospitals are reporting 84% of ICU beds in use and 86% of total beds in use. McKnight also reported that 1,417 county residents were in home isolation and 6,190 had recovered since March. IDPH and the County Health Department recommend that people stay home as much as possible, including for Thanksgiving. People who are planning to attend a Thanksgiving gathering should bring their own food and drinks and disposable plates, cups, and utensils. Wear a mask except when eating and drinking, avoid going into areas where food is being prepared, and use single-use options such as salad dressing and condiment packets, she advised. Statewide, IDPH reported on Monday 8,322 new COVID cases to bring the state's total to 664,620 and 47 new deaths to increase the number of fatalities in the state to 11,552. As of Sunday night, 6,171 people in Illinois were hospitalized with COVID, with 1,206 in ICU and 635 on ventilators. In other COVID news, Walmart announced that a COVID drive-through testing site outside Walmart at 300 Greenbrier Drive in Normal will transition to curbside pickup of self-administered COVID collection kits. Customers may request a test kit at www.myquest-covidtest.com. Curbside pickup will be open 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. and 2:30 to 4 p.m., Mondays through Saturdays, and 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. and 2:30 to 4 p.m. on Sundays. Continuing on the topic of COVID, we have county decisions case by case. Renner, Knapp at odds over enforcement of COVID restrictions. This is by Kevin Barlow. As McLean County's top prosecutor, State's Attorney Don Knapp said he's used to hearing opinions about how he should do his job. That has only increased with the series of executive orders from Governor J.B. Pritzker's office with mitigations for the COVID-19 pandemic. Some in the community wish that the state's attorney's office take action every time an individual is observed in public without a mask, Knapp said. Others demand that I announce unequivocally that my office will take no enforcement action whatsoever regarding COVID-19 restrictions coming from Springfield. Citing his 12 years of experience writing opinions for the Illinois Appellate Court, Knapp said he can confidently state that neither action would be well-founded in the law. What, of course, is well-founded is reviewing actions of citizens or businesses brought to our attention and intervening when probable cause exists to indicate actions run afoul of the law, he said. Such decisions, commonly referred to as charging decisions, are made on a case-by-case basis without prejudgment. Knapp's position was the focal point of a verbal attack from Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner Friday during a special meeting of the Bloomington Liquor Commission. Renner said the county's health department has been shackled in terms of enforcement by the McLean County State's Attorney's Office. Pritzker, a Chicago Democrat, on November 1st announced restrictions for the region, including Bloomington Normal, that had specified bars and restaurants must discontinue indoor service, have all outdoor service in by 11 p.m., and have all patrons seated outside at tables at least 6 feet apart. In addition, meetings and social gatherings were limited to 25 people or 25% of room capacity, whichever was less. He further announced November 17th that the entire state would enter Tier 3 of his mitigation plan, which includes limits on gatherings and capacity restrictions for a variety of businesses. Bloomington cited 12 bars and restaurants for disobeying the indoor service rule and the closing time restricted on November 13th and 14th. Though none were fined, all were warned at the special meeting that fines and suspension of their liquor licenses may result from future violations. The message was sent, but Renner also used the meeting to blast Knapp for not prosecuting other violators of the restrictions imposed by Pritzker's executive orders. Other means of enforcement that are more broad include those that the health department does possess, Renner said. In spite of, unfortunately, our state attorney's extremely narrow, ideological, and extremely partisan views on this. Renner said that the state is clearly overwhelmed at this point, and conflicting directives from or signals sent from government cloud the issue. The city, he adds, can take action against those with liquor licenses. In many ways, that is unfortunate, because if people don't have a liquor license, then they wouldn't be facing discipline, even if we knew there had been violations, Renner said. It is the responsibility of local public health departments and Mr. Knapp, our state's attorney, to please pay attention. It is the responsibility of local public health departments for enforcement, education, and potential closure orders, regardless of whether they have liquor licenses. Tom DeFore, a Southern Illinois attorney who defended Cadillac Jack's after the bar was cited and fined in September for violating COVID-19 restrictions, said only two or three counties in Illinois have taken efforts to try to close a business down because of the governor's orders. The appellate court prosecutor's office in April sent out a letter to all state's attorneys and appellate prosecutors. Are not partisan, he said. They said, state's attorneys, be careful with trying to enforce executive orders with the Department of Health Act, because you could be subjecting yourself and your county to federal civil rights violations. Knapp and Sheriff John Sandage issued a joint statement on November 4th saying a violation of the order is not a violation of the state criminal code. Knapp said his office will work with agency partners to review behavior through the lens of the authorities and bring legal action if appropriate. Be it civil or criminal action, each instance in which litigation is contemplated presents innumerable factors which must be cataloged and analyzed before a determination of potential liability can be made, Knapp said. Furthermore, he added, we are aware of no criminal penalty contained within any gubernatorial executive order. It appears clear that a violation of a guideline contained with a gubernatorial executive order does not, in and of itself, equate to a violation of the Illinois Criminal Code of 2012. Renner argued for Knapp to change his mind. You cannot make decisions if you are a state's attorney based on your extreme partisan and your extreme ideological views. You have to make decisions based on what is best for your community. So I have called upon the newly elected McLean County Board, which will be seated December 1st, to put pressure not only on the state's attorney, but on the health department to make sure they do their job beyond what they have been. Renner said the health department does well on tracking issues. But in terms of enforcement, the state's attorney's opinions exist only in the state's attorney's minds and not out here in the real world, he added. We have a real public health crisis, and there is no excuse on why we would be in the top 10 in the entire country for spiking. The New York Times earlier this month identified Bloomington as one of the metro areas with the fastest growing case rate in the U.S. on a population adjusted basis. Continuing on the topic of COVID, we have Another Vaccine Shows Promise. This is by Danica Kirka, Deanne Durbin, and David Koenig of the Associated Press. Drug maker AstraZeneca said Monday that late-stage trials showed its COVID-19 vaccine is highly effective, buoying the prospects of a relatively cheap, easy-to-store product that may become the vaccine of choice for the developing world. The results are based on an interim analysis of trials in the UK and Brazil of a vaccine developed by Oxford University and manufactured by AstraZeneca. No hospitalizations or severe cases of COVID-19 were reported in those receiving the vaccine. AstraZeneca is the third major drug company to report late-stage data for a potential COVID-19 vaccine, as the world waits for scientific breakthroughs that will end a pandemic that has pummeled the world economy and led to 1.4 million deaths. But unlike the others, the Oxford-AstraZeneca vaccine doesn't have to be stored at freezer temperatures, making it potentially easier to distribute, especially in developing countries. I think these are really exciting results, Dr. Andrew Pollard, chief investigator for the trial, said at a news conference. Because the vaccine can be stored at fridge temperatures, it can be distributed around the world using the normal immunization distribution system. And so our goal, to make sure that we have a vaccine that was accessible everywhere, I think we've actually managed to do that. The Oxford-AstraZeneca vaccine was 90% effective in preventing COVID-19 in one of the dosing regimens tested. It was less effective in another. Earlier this month, rival drug makers Pfizer and Moderna reported preliminary results from late-stage trials showing their vaccines were almost 95% effective. While the AstraZeneca vaccine can be stored at 36 degrees to 46 degrees Fahrenheit, the Pfizer and Moderna products must be stored at freezer temperatures. In Pfizer's case, it must be kept at the ultra-cold temperature of around minus 94 degrees Fahrenheit. The AstraZeneca vaccine is also cheaper. AstraZeneca, which has pledged it won't make a profit on the vaccine during the pandemic, has reached agreements with governments and international health organizations that put its cost at about $2.50 a dose. Pfizer's vaccine costs about $20 a dose, while Moderna is $15 to $25 based on agreements the companies have struck to supply their vaccines to the United States government. In local news, we have Bloomington Council OK's Utility Billing System by Annalisa Trofimuk. A new utility billing system is coming next year. Bloomington City Council members on Monday approved using Invoice Cloud, a platform for utility billing meant to be easier for electronic payments. Scott Rathbun, ex-director of finance, said the platform is a win-win for the city and residents. They provided a statistic that 35% of late payments are due to just people forgetting to pay, Rathbun said. The constant communication that this system is really built to provide, it saves the consumers late fees as well as improving the city's cash flow. Users can get reminders, confirmation notifications, and other features. There's also an interactive voice response feature for Spanish-speaking users and retail cash payments where users can make utility payments at certain retailers. According to a city memo, the Invoice Cloud fees are primarily based on electronic transactions processed through the platform. The initial gross cost is estimated to be approximately $105,000. This cost will be spread between the following enterprise funds related to their utility billing activity: water, stormwater, sewer, and solid waste. A new Aldi grocery store is to be located on the southeast side of town is in the works. City Council members on Monday approved a site plan review from the city's Economic Development Department for the grocer that would be located at Village Lane and South Mercer Avenue. The vacant property is part of the Parkway Village planned unit development. Shops and businesses in that area are accessible by Connect Transit's Orange Line, which also runs on South Mercer Avenue. A 20,000 square foot Aldi that would be built on the site is planned to include 96 parking spaces, 2 electric vehicle parking spaces, 3 bicycle racks, and 4 accessible parking spaces. Council approval means that the development of a grocery store on the site can begin. In other business, the council approved routine measures including the $371,000 purchase of rock salt in preparation for the winter season. Council members also approved the renewal of a $203,000 contract for software maintenance and support covering the city's Microsoft licensing. The council will hold their next open session meeting on December 7th. During a previous meeting, City Manager Tim Gleason mentioned the council would take an official vote on the proposed property tax levies for the city and library. Nora Dukowitz, a spokesperson for the city, previously said the rate will not change from last year. Next, we have Museum Reimagines Exhibit by Sierra Henry. The Children's Discovery Museum's climbing exhibit is getting a makeover. The museum announced plans to use $568,000 in state capital grants to redesign and upgrade the iconic Lucky Climber feature. The grant was awarded through the Illinois Public Museum Capital Grants Program, funded by Governor J.B. Pritzker's Rebuild Illinois State Capital Program. The funding will go toward new materials, said Beth Wisman, director of the Normal Cultural Arts Department and Children's Discovery Museum. We've always been vigilant about cleaning our climber, but COVID-19 presented new challenges regarding speed and ease of cleaning high-touch surfaces in tight spaces, Wisman said in a statement. We took this opportunity to rethink several aspects of the exhibit to improve access to play and overall sanitation. Pritzker announced last week the Children's Discovery Museum and Miller Park Zoo in Bloomington were among 43 Illinois institutions receiving a portion of a $22.8 million grant in state capital investments for improving facilities and developing new exhibits. The zoo will get $750,000 toward phase one of a South America project. The Lucky Climber exhibit features brightly colored climbing pedals suspended from the ceiling of the 3-floor building. It uses steel pipes and cables to create a colorful and elegant work of art, as well as a play structure, according to a museum news release. Concept art shows multiple levels of the climbing pedals surrounded by cables and a see-through floor and wall. The new design will also include access for wheelchairs and strollers to the surrounding area. Construction could begin within the next 2 years, depending on the grant agreement and funding cycle. With that, we conclude the first part of the reading for the Pantograph on Tuesday, November 24th, 2020. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with the second half.